Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast from KJZZ's The Show. Each Friday, we review the biggest and most important political stories of the week with a panel of experts, which puts those stories into perspective to help us understand why they matter. Here's this week's episode.
They fire from a distance, but their pepper spray canisters create a choking cloud. And, you know, one of the agents on the field literally looked and fired a pellet directly at me.
Come on, you know, Arizona Independent Party, would you naturally assume that that's everyone that's registered as an independent? I mean, I would, and I like to think that I'm in the know.
In our standards, equity simply meant giving every student fair access to learning, seating a child where they can hear, providing large print, or pre-teaching vocabulary for English learners.
It's a common sense bill. It's a public safety bill. It's not excessive regulation. So I think it'll be well received, and it's been well received from the public.
Land is perhaps one of the most important areas, and we have nearly 300,000 acres within 10 miles of cities and towns that are going undeveloped, unleased, or whatever.
I just think that we've had for too long, both at the state and the federal level, people in, and we need new representation and fresh ideas and a younger generation.
And joining me to talk about a lawsuit challenging the number of signatures independent candidates need to collect to make the ballot, a renewed national effort to flip the state legislature, and more are Doug Cole of High Ground. Doug, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
And Democratic strategist Tony Connie. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Doug, let me start with you on this lawsuit. A couple of things related to state parties and elections here. I want to start with the Arizona Independent Party, which is the party formerly known as No Labels, which has sued over the signature requirements for independent candidates to make the ballot. Independent candidates have to collect a lot more signatures than a Democratic candidate or a Republican or even a Libertarian or Green Party candidate. I'm curious, we're not lawyers in this room, but like,
thank goodness.
You said it, not me. You know, like what? I'm curious what you make of this. Seems like it has been an impediment for independent candidates in the past.
Well, this has been in the public dialogue for years, Mark, because it is so unfair that independent candidates, which are the second largest group of voters in the state of Arizona, you know, it's roughly a third, a third, and a third, but Republicans being the most, and then non-affiliated voters slash independents, and then the Democrats come in the bottom of those three thirds. So you're disenfranchising, in my mind, that second largest voter group in Arizona, because it requires like six, seven times more signatures to qualify for the ballot. So this has been a dialogue that's been happening. We had Prop 140 last election cycle, mm-hmm. that the Make Elections Fair Act that the voters rejected. There's been other efforts before, it's all about voter access. Remember, each state gets to decide how they make their own state laws on voter access and how they conduct elections. So this is up to Arizona. It's up to the voters if they want to do it through an initiative or a referendum process or the state legislature and now a court ruling. So that's where we are with this. It's probably going to be too late for the 2026 elections to affect anything, because we're already underway collecting signatures.
Tony, in the past, we have seen the two major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, not being super thrilled about something like this, like perhaps for obvious reasons. Do you think this is something that, for example, if the court ruled that the signature requirement is too high, would that lead to more independent candidates on the ballot, do you think?
It might, but this lawsuit's about the Arizona Independent Party, isn't it?
Right. So, well, they're the ones who filed it. Yeah.
So right there is the confusion with the name, the Arizona Independent Party. This conversation started with us saying it's about unaffiliated independent voters, but really it's about small parties that maybe have, you know, that means that they have, you know, the way the state works, the number of registered voters is a percentage of the number of registered voters you have to get from a signature. And so, you know, I want to point out that confusion, which is part of the reason why I think the name would change from No Labels to Arizona Independent Party took place. But, you know, I think that if this does go through, there probably will be more candidates who qualify for the ballot. Whether or not they actually succeed is another question. I think getting people on the ballot is one thing, but being able to appeal to voters is a second thing. And the way elections have worked for the last several years, the most important thing is the partisan branding. That's really what's making a big difference in these elections. You saw up, in Andy Biggs' district where there was a sort of a moderate, unaffiliated candidate, a Democratic candidate who had no support, and Andy Biggs, and the Democratic candidate who had no sort of structural support or money was the one that got second place because people were voting based on partisanship. Mm. And so there's more than just access to the ballot that's at play here. That's important for sort of candidates in order to be taken seriously. And so I think more candidates qualifying, sure, but I'm not sure that'll make a big difference when it comes to elections.
Well, so Tony, you mentioned the confusion, and the Democratic Party this week filed a lawsuit to try to get a court to require the Arizona Independent Party to change its name. I don't know if it has to go back to the No Labels Party or just make it not the Arizona Independent Party. Last week, the Clean Elections Commission sued basically over the same thing. Sounds like you think there is a legitimate claim of confusion here.
Yeah, I think that there is. Sure. I do think that there can be some real confusion with that here.
Well, we saw what we heard your setup. The Democratic Party Chair Charlene Fernandez make her points, and then Tom, you just brought up Tom Collins and the Clean Elections Commission. They've also joined in this effort. And his point that Tom Collins I've heard him make over the last couple of weeks is: look, if I'm not paying attention and I check on when I'm registering to vote at MVD or wherever, where I thought it was choosing. Being an independent, a party not declared, that's kind of the two categories mm-hmm. we have now, an independent party. I assume then that I can pull the ballot of my choice because in Arizona, if you're not affiliated, you can choose whether to pull the Democrat ballot or a Republican ballot or a Green ballot. And all of a sudden, an independent party ballot shows up in my mailbox if I'm voting early, then really there's no recourse at this point. So that's the point, I think, when the Clean Elections Commission was making their vote to challenge this effort, and I think it's valid.
And that really hurts independent voters because it means that an independent voter who decided that they liked a Democrat in a primary, wanted to vote in the primary, would show up and they'd be told they weren't allowed to do so.
Correct, because there's a lot of voters that in the independents that are very wise. They go back and forth depending upon what race mm-hmm. is important for them in the primary.
Or what level of competition there
Correct.
Is. Correct. Doug, do you think that the signature requirement, like would you expect that the parties might get involved to try to stop the change and keep independent candidates having to get more signatures?
Well, I think as Tony so eloquently stated, that you know they're protecting their brand, and I think his choice of the congressional race in Andy Biggs's district, I think, is very illustrative of what's going on. I can't imagine them not protecting their brand. I mean, that's why Prop 140 failed. There was a lot of partisan money that came into that effort to kill it.
So let's move from lawsuits to there's no great transition for this one. So we'll just go down to southern Arizona where a new Congresswoman, Adelita Grijalva, was at an ICE raid in Tucson. I think this was late last week. And she says that an ICE agent pepper sprayed her. ICE and Department of Homeland Security has denied this, saying that she's making it up. Tony, I'm curious what you make of all this. I mean, absent, I guess, eyewitness or body camera footage, we really don't know exactly what happened. And even with that, maybe we don't know exactly what happened. But Congresswoman Grijalva, you know, we heard her just say, you know, there's sort of a cloud of smoke and an agent looked right at her as they were firing.
Yeah. And there's some, you know, video footage from, you know, people who were at the event. I think that shows what the Congresswoman is claiming took place. And, you know, historically, historically meaning like the last – boy, it feels like this term has been a really long time. But
last
Trump has only been in
maybe.
Office in 11 months. But over the last 11 months, ICE has not been, you know, in their public statements very honest about the situations that they're facing. The number of times that they've claimed one thing and then when it came to a court filing or something, they had to claim something else is very, very high. And so – I would take the congresswoman at her word here because I don't know what she gains from making this up. And it is, you know, it's this kind of thing where those aggressive, you know, tactics are really backfiring. And I think that the public is very frustrated with it.
Mark, I would have been surprised if Congresswoman Grijalva was not there. I mean, this is her father. This was his brand when he was the longtime serving congressman and County Pima County Supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
down in southern Arizona. This is their family brand, and this type of demonstration supporting her community, it's not going to stop. That's what she's going to do, and she does it well, and that's how she's been on the school boards down in Tucson, and followed her father on the Pima County Board of Supervisors. So, she's going to continue this and fight back, especially as long as Donald Trump is in the White House. But even if he wasn't in the White House, I would expect, in a similar circumstance, that she would be there. That's just her brand.
Is there anything, to Tony's point, does she gain anything? And not to suggest that what she says happened didn't happen, sure. But is there anything to gain from her to embellish this?
Look, everyone has their corners in the boxing ring. I mean, this situation with the Trump administration and with immigration enforcement and ICE, we're going to see this time and time again over the years remaining in the Trump administration, which are many years left.
3 years left.
Yeah. Exactly.
Tony, we saw this week the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, a national organization, added both the Arizona House and Senate to its list of immediate battleground flip opportunities. This has come after a number of special elections around the country where Democrats have done pretty darn well in many cases, flipping seats or at least outperforming what they did last year. I have to say, though, this is a song we've heard before, right, that this is the year that the Democrats are going to flip the Arizona legislature. I'm curious what you make of this investment, this effort by this national group here coming up in 2026.
Well, I wish it was a bigger investment. Not that it's a bad investment, but I think that it's going to cost a decent amount of money in order for us to flip one of these chambers. I think that it comes down to – I don't think it's a wrong label. I don't think that it's overly optimistic. I think that now it comes down to us here in the state as Democrats. It's about candidate recruitment. It's about how much money the candidates raise. And it's about whether or not our candidates can run robust modern campaigns. And I think in the recent past, a handful of the campaigns on the legislative side from Democrats, I think they fell short. And – sort of tactically, not that the candidates did. And so that's really the question this year, which is are they going to be able to run an aggressive enough campaign to overcome, some really smart Republican legislative tactics? That's been the challenge, because when you have a party switch election where the governor needs Republicans to vote for her in order to win, it gets much harder the farther you go down the ballot to convince those people who typically vote for Republicans to vote for Democrats. So you have to make the case directly to them, and that's really what it takes.
Well, Doug, I wonder, this is obviously a big election for Democrats and Republicans, of course, in Arizona, but Democrats are defending three statewide seats, and it feels like that is where a lot of the oxygen would go, kind of to Tony's point, that by the time you get down the ballot, are people maybe paying as much attention, or does it become harder for Democrats to maintain that down the ballot?
Well, you're correct about the three statewide elections that are currently held by Democrats. That'd be the governor, the secretary of state, and the attorney general. But what's not on the ballot this time is U.S. Senate. We've had
for the first time
in a long time. It's because it all started with John McCain's death, mm-hmm. and it created musical chairs. So we do not have a U.S. Senate candidate, which draws in millions and millions and millions of national dollars. Tony's correct. Down ballot, people tend to stay with their own party once they get off the marquee races. We're in a midterm cycle also. We don't have Donald Trump on the ballot like we had in 24. Democrats tried to counter that by having Prop 139, which is the abortion access in 24. They put Democrat-aligned groups in the ADLCC and the DLCC put in roughly $10 million in 24, and they lost seats. Mm-hmm. The two chambers got more Republican. And historically, on midterm elections, if a party controls both the White House and both chambers of Congress, it tends to be a banner year for the opposite party. And I think that they're trying to maybe try to ride that coattail in here, but historically in Arizona, midterm elections, because of the voter registration and alignment with the non-affiliated voters, tend to vote more Republican, no matter who's in the White House or who controls Congress. So it's going to be – I agree with Tony. It's going to be a steep hill to climb. I think they've announced $50 million, but they said they want to play in 42 states.
I would say the one thing I'd say is that like we can't forget how wildly unpopular Trump is right now and how very closely aligned these legislative candidates are going to be on the Republican side to Trump. And that's what it comes down to is that don't forget, like I said, it's about branding. This will be a nationalized race even though it's at the local level. And, you know, the Democrats just won a district that Trump won by 12 points in Georgia. And so I do think that compared to previous years, the wind is at our backs. But still, it's going to be tough.
So do you think then that legislative Democratic candidates will be trying to make themselves the anti-Trump? Do legislative races on the Democratic side become nationalized as well, do you think?
I think so. But I think it's probably a better strategy for us to frame the Republican candidates as pro-Trump. I think that's more likely what will make sense. And then for our candidates to continue to focus on issues of affordability and things that make sense. I mean, don't forget the president recently said that the affordability stuff is a hoax, a Democratic invented hoax. You know, he's getting a lot of attention for a lot of really wild things that he's saying, and I don't think it's going to get better. So, so I think the Democrats do have a chance here, sure.
But again, as I stated previously, Arizona has a long history of midterm elections that the Republicans do better than the Democrat Party. So if Tony's prediction is going to, become true, then it's all going to have to be a very, very good ground game and get those voters out. Because I can tell you, we do a lot of polling at our firm, as you know.
Yeah.
I can tell you Republicans turn out and conservative, non-affiliated voters turn out time and time again.
Doug, do you think any of the Democrats at the top of the ticket, Katie Hobbs, Adrian Fontes, Chris Mays, do they have enough coattails, do you think, to bring Democrats down ballot over the finish line?
Well, it depends. In Arizona, we have very few competitive legislative districts. We have 30 legislative districts, and roughly 4 to 5 are considered truly competitive.
Right.
We have some marquee Democrats that have just decided they're not going to run in LD9, which is in West Mesa. That's a swing district. So that right there, puts them behind the eight ball. But then you have Aaron Lieberman, who a longtime state senator from the Paradise
State
Valley.
State representative,
who ran for governor. He's back and he's going to challenge Senator Werner in LD4. So, I think that there are some quality. It's all, candidate quality counts. It really does. Mm-hmm. So, but I got to tell you, it's going to be an uphill battle, even with this outside money coming in. In this off cycle, even with Donald Trump's unpopularity with a broad swath of the electorate.
Tony, very quickly before we move on, do you think there's one chamber where Democrats have a better chance to flip than the other, or do you think it's sort of an equal opportunity here?
I can't say that in a way that's educated because I don't know okay. the candidates that are recruited because I think I don't like making an assessment just based on like the math of the districts because I do think that candidate quality is wildly underestimated in a lot of this the sort of punditry that happens around this.
Fair enough. Okay, so guys, there is a proposal. Tis the season for pre-filing bills at the legislature. There's a proposal for folks who get into the legislature to give them more money, but there would be a requirement that a more stringent term limit requirement where you get 8 years in the House, 8 years in the Senate, and then you're done, as opposed to right now where you can basically just go back and forth for as long as you want to, assuming you continue to win elections. Doug, salaries haven't been raised since the late 90s. Lawmakers make $24,000 a year. It's supposed to be a part-time job. This would raise it pretty significantly, and the argument is more money, more quality candidates.
Well, there are a number of proposals out there. I'll be right up front. I'm a big supporter of raising their salaries. It was at $15,000 a year forever, and then in 1998, when Governor Jane Hull was the governor, was raised to the current $24,000 a year. Plus, they get a per diem, and if you live outside of Maricopa County, you get a lot more in per diem. But anyway, it just hasn't been raised, and I don't know anybody's salary that is working today that has not been raised since 1998. And that's a real impediment for, again, quality candidates, okay? Because you really have to be independently wealthy or retired to afford to do this. If you're a young person with a family, there's no way that you can be a legislator. And that's why we see these folks that, as I just mentioned earlier, in LD9 – backing away because they really cannot afford to raise their family and the salary. So something needs to be done. I am never – we do have term limits right now, and it's called an election. I'm not one for these artificial numbers, pick a number and you're done. That's not democracy in my mind. I think that the voters are discerning and they put them out. But the proposal you talked about, which is by my representative, Stacey Travers from LD12, raised it only to $35,000 a year. And then had the 16 years. If you're going to do this, go a little bit bigger and then index it. So we're not in this
index
problem.
To inflation.
Yes, exactly.
Tony, do you think the salary is a reason why maybe we're not getting the caliber of candidates that we could be getting?
100%. The number of people I know who would be excellent in government that aren't able to run because they financially can't afford it is very, very high. And not only – remember, it's very expensive to run your campaign. And you can't really have a job if you're running like an effective campaign. Like, it's not really an after work type of thing for most of these races. But, the idea is the state legislature is supposed to be like a part-time job. But
the citizen legislature.
That it isn't. We know that it isn't. And there's huge chunks of time where these folks just have to be down there. I also think that it opens up with these low salaries. It opens us up to more pressure when it comes to sort of corruption, when it comes to people – taking benefits from outside forces to for dinners and for trips and in some cases probably for money and so raising these salaries I think is in the public's best interest, but the public isn't super happy with elected officials, and so it's really challenging to get this through.
And under the Constitution, the salaries have to be voter approved.
And they've been defeated pretty much every time they've been on the ballot since then. So very quickly, do both of you think – we have about 45 seconds left. Do you both think that it is possible to craft a campaign to get voters to say yes to one of these proposals?
Yeah, well-funded with a lot of education underneath it, yes.
Yeah, I mean the city of Tucson struggled with this, but they recently passed it. Obviously, it's a different demographic.
Yeah.
But there are some there's some campaigns you can point to see how to get this done.
All right, we'll see if that happens. Tony Khani, Doug Cole, thanks you both for coming in. Happy holidays.
Happy
really
holidays
it.
To you, Mark.
That's all for this week's Friday Newscap. You can find the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.